swearing on for the cabinet that I'll ask the president to dissolve the 32nd Dáil. I've always said that the election should happen at the best time for the country. Now is that time.
And therefore, if that is achieved, that you do have the possibility of creating greater growth in the society and creating better jobs.
Are we certain that we actually have the critical mass of public infrastructure and public service capacity to ensure that we can keep this golden goose that we have and that we can actually be the family that makes future generations better off?
Business at the ballot box. Be the voice.
This is Business at the Ballot Box, a daily general election podcast series brought to you by IBEC, the voice of Irish business. I'm Patrick Haughey, and for the last few days, I have been meeting business leaders, campaigners and policy experts to analyse the election issues that are top of the priority list for business leaders and their workforce in this campaign. We have now officially entered the last week of the campaign, and in this episode, we are looking at one of the biggest issues in business and in society right now, climate change and sustainability. With Ireland arguably having a pretty poor climate scorecard, will the next government have the vision, drive and courage to make some serious improvements in this area? In a few minutes' time, I will be meeting the Chief Sustainability Officer of Hewlett-Packard Enterprise, who came straight from the Davos Economic Forum to Ireland to talk about how businesses are leading the way when it comes to driving through sustainability reform. But first, let's meet today's panel. I am joined by Marion Troy, Head of Corporate Affairs at SSE Thermal, Oisin Coughlan, CEO of Friends of the Earth Ireland, and Conor Minogue, Energy and Climate Spokesperson here at IBEC. You are all very welcome to the podcast, guys. Conor, I'm going to start with yourself. Now, Ireland, I think it's fair to say we signed up to relatively ambitious commitments nationally and internationally in this space. Are we on track or pretty far off track at this stage?
It's a very short answer. We are significantly off track. Ireland has signed up to the 2015 Paris Agreement. We're also part of the Energy and Climate Framework at an EU level. And then we've made national commitments as well. And in all cases, when it comes to emissions reduction, we are way off track. And the problem there is that we're delaying a lot of the action. So it's going to become harder and harder as time goes on. And that is why IBEC has made this one of its kind of key issues in this election. It's at the forefront of our manifesto. In May last year, May 2019, we published our own low carbon roadmap setting out a vision for 2050. And the key message there is we did this roadmap in consultation with our membership across different sectors. And the key message there was the low carbon transition is actually really good for business. It's really good for Ireland as well. It doesn't just make environmental sense. It makes economic sense as well. Because if we do this the right way, if we're smart about it, we can boost competitiveness, we can increase security of supply and improve quality of life as well. It means a lot of work, it means a lot of investment and some big changes for business, but also big changes for everyday life, for consumers, for households as well. But it's a rare opportunity to build a better Ireland. So action is needed now. Government's action is needed, but also from a business side as well. There's a responsibility as well in terms of reducing its own carbon footprint, influencing its position in the supply chain, and then also enabling the technologies, enabling the behavioural changes and business models that are needed to realise the ambition.
Before we get to what the right way to do this is and what's needed to allow the right way to actually happen, I'd like to ask you, why are we so far behind? Were we overambitious when it came to the commitments we made, or have things happened in the interim that have made it out of our control?
I think there are a number of factors, and the others might want to come in on this. The targets that we have at an EU level were set in 2008, and I think maybe at the time there's an understanding that the target was perhaps a bit too ambitious, particularly as it didn't take into account the role of agricultural emissions at the time, which are extremely difficult to reduce, unlike some other sectors of the economy. But that's at the same time, it's still no excuse for the lack of progress. And a lot of the lack of progress has come down to, I suppose, inaction and a postponement of some very difficult decisions. So that would be a kind of a key ask coming into the next government, is because there's a big risk that there's going to be a fractured government, potentially another minority government, which won't be in a position to make some of the hard decisions that are needed. So strong political leadership is needed from all political parties to bring in the changes that are necessary.
Well, to pick up on the last point first, I totally agree with Conor that we need all parties in all governments for the next 10 years or indeed 30 years to put climate change front and centre if we're going to galvanise society and galvanise policy in a way that enables us all to make the transition to zero carbon pollution as we need to make over the next decade or two. I would just want to have a different emphasis to Conor about the history, because that remark I just made, we've been saying for the last 15 years and it hasn't happened. Our analysis is a lack of leadership rather than over ambition. And I've always had a bit of a problem with the word ambition when it comes to climate targets, when all the targets that we've adopted so far are inadequate when you compare them to the science or even compared to the Paris Agreement now. So, because when we use the word ambition, we tend to think, oh, well, if I don't quite live up to that, it still could be quite good. But if your ambition isn't adequate to actually solve the problem, well, then it's a mismatch of understanding. So, you know, we should have been aiming as European Union for 40 to 55% reductions by 2020. And instead, I think it's a 20% reduction overall. It's challenging for sure for Ireland because of the recession. But Ireland's excuses keep changing. We were too rich to meet our 2010 targets. We're too poor to meet our 2020 targets. And could you please give us easier targets for 2030? Maybe we'll meet it now. And the government keeps seeming to think that, oh, if we wait, it'll be cheaper. Now, some things do get cheaper over time, but also the scale you have to do gets bigger and you miss out on opportunities. So if we had started this 20 years ago, 2% a year reductions, which is what the government is planning now, would have been fine. If we started 10 years ago, 3% a year reductions would be fine. Now, if you look at the UN figures, we need to do at least 8% a year, year-on-year reductions for the next 10 years to be on track for our Paris commitments. That is challenging by any means, and no party has yet committed to it, I don't think.
You stated on Twitter recently you've been watching Irish elections obsessively since 1981. So you're a good man for my next question. Is climate change and sustainability higher up on the political and the election agenda than it ever has been since 1981?
I think the answer to that question is yes. Although it's interesting watching the Twitter debate and even the media debate saying, where's climate change gone in the election? And I suppose it depends on your metrics. Compared to the last 18 months where Greta Thunberg and David Attenborough and Davos dominated and the school strikes and Extinction Rebellion dominated the media agenda in a big way internationally, climate isn't featuring as much as you might expect in the election agenda. But if you look at the polling, there was polling over the weekend from the Times, which had environment as the fourth highest issue after health, housing, cost of living, and then it came environment, the economy came in a middle bunch there. So compared to previously, that's to be in the top four issues or to be in the second tier after the top three is really positive. And even if you look at the Irish Times poll where you only got to choose one thing, so housing and health got way high up, and then the economy, Brexit and climate were down in single figures, but they were together. Now, if you'd asked me 5 years ago, would you settle for climate being up there with the economy and Brexit, I would have said, well, I wouldn't have heard of Brexit, but I would have said, yes, that'd be good. So actually, climate is featuring more. All the parties feel they have to talk about it now. Now, whether they're doing enough is a different question, but they are all at least feeling the heat to be having something to say on climate.
In terms of action and solutions, Marion, you would have a good view because you're SSE Thermal. You guys are sort of at the heart of trying to do something about where we're at. So just tell us a little bit about the company and your view on this from your perspective.
Yeah, so SSE Ireland is a company that operates across the UK and Ireland. We're the largest renewable generator on the island of Ireland, so across Northern Ireland and the Republic. And I think when it comes to looking at Ireland's targets, electricity is a sector where we've done best. And really it's a sector that shows that when we set our mind to it and when we put the policies in place that we can realise these targets. The last government in the Climate Action Plan has set out a plan for 2030, and I suppose what we'd be saying is make sure that we put all of the supportive policies in place to deliver that 70% target. I think going back a number of years, we set a 40% target for 2020, where we won't quite hit it, but we're nearly there. Say 15 years ago when Airtricity built Arklow Bank offshore wind park, that was a demonstrator project and really world leading. But in the meantime, we've lost momentum. So whilst Ireland will almost meet its 40% target, the sector has stalled in the last couple of years because the support scheme that was there came to an end and we've been too long really in putting a replacement in place. So the way I think I describe our sector is we're kind of warmed up and on the start line, but we're waiting for the gun to fire to really get on and deliver these projects. And we need the supportive policies to do that, whether it be planning, the renewable electricity support scheme or marine consenting. When it comes maybe to the election and whether climate has featured, I think it is a cross-cutting, cross-sectoral issue. So it will be baked into a lot of different areas and different sectoral parts. But I think what we need to focus on, perhaps we had the more lively debate a couple of months ago, but now it's around making sure that the more mundane nuts and bolts elements that will enable us to decarbonise are built in to our planning system, to our marine consenting system.
Just one thing on that. I mean, I said before that leadership is a key element of getting these decisions made. But actually, the other thing that we may all agree on is that there aren't enough staff in the department. That's one of the reasons why there's a pipeline of all these decisions that need to get taken. And between public consultations and drafting it and consulting with the European Commission, there just isn't enough staff to get enough of the things done to let business and civil society get on with the actual activity. That's been a real, I think, barrier to progress over the last 5 years. There's been embargoes and so on, but they haven't prioritised recruitment now to enable these policies to be developed in time. So the decision gets taken sometimes, but then it's 2 or 3 years before actually the starting gun is fired on action.
That's really interesting, and I think it ties into a sort of a core IBEC message as well, something that Danny McCoy has been very eloquent on this series and in many speeches, is that the country has grown so fast, the private sector has grown so fast, the public services to support that growth have not grown in tandem, and the ratio has just gone way out of whack. So that would be a good example of that.
Yes, I think so. And I don't quite know what the blockage is there, although I think maybe there's almost a fear among politicians to be seen to be expanding the public service. Although if people like Danny McCoy are also advocating for it, you would think there's a permission there to do it without any, you know, sort of negative debate. But whatever it is, it's just, or else the ministers fight for their political corner, but they don't invest enough in their own departmental capacity. One good thing that has happened over the last few years, though, is there's now an Office for Climate Action in the Department of the Taoiseach, headed up by a very able civil servant, who is beginning now to have a cross-cutting coordination role under the Climate Action Plan, like there was under the Action Plan for Jobs. Because again, you know, however strong the minister is, who happens to, whether it's Richard Bruton now or whoever succeeds him, they don't have the cross-cutting authority of the Taoiseach or the Minister for Finance. So it's really good to have a strong office in the Taoiseach's department, given, as we said, it's such a cross-cutting issue across so many sectors. You know, and you need to deliver action in transport, in agriculture, in the housing, in order to actually deliver the emissions. The person who's setting the tone on climate doesn't have the levers to actually deliver the cuts. So you need all of government buy-in.
Well, expanding public services is a big decision for the next government, or whether or not to. Another big decision is how do we bring together the money to pay for the infrastructure and the various other things that need to fuel our action around climate change. That inevitably raises the issue of carbon taxes. What are your thoughts on carbon taxes, Marion, and the willingness of people to actually take money out of their pockets to put towards real change?
Yeah, one of perhaps the policy measures that hasn't maybe been seen by the general public is that we've been paying a carbon tax in the electricity sector for a number of years. The idea of it is to make higher carbon generation sources more expensive and to ensure that we use the lower carbon ones. It's a policy measure that has helped renewable and low carbon generation to prosper, and that we get more energy from that source over the last number of years. And it's something that we think has worked very well in the electricity sector. In the UK, they have enhanced the European scheme with what they call a carbon price floor, and that has ensured that coal generation is coming to an end. It's coming to the end of its natural life anyhow, but it's been a very successful policy measure. And in promoting the lower carbon generation, it can succeed in reducing electricity prices over the longer term. So we think that certainly for the electricity sector, it's a positive. And when it comes to ensuring that electricity is competitively priced with other energy sources, carbon taxation definitely has a positive influence. We're very happy to see that in the Climate Action Plan there is talk about increased carbon taxes then being used to fund other decarbonisation measures, because we're very strongly of the view that we tax carbon in order to stop people from emitting carbon, not that you continue to emit it and that you pay for it. So we think that the other side of that coin is that we use those monies to facilitate people to reduce their carbon emissions, whether it's taking energy efficiency measures in their businesses or insulating their homes or transferring to electric vehicles. So carbon tax really can drive both sides of that argument. So we think it's a very positive measure.
And I think that's one thing we've seen over the years, is that I suppose there's an element of distrust or mistrust among the taxpayer that money levied to try and solve a problem is not being actually ring-fenced to solve that problem. Do you think, are we going to see something different from the next government, or would you hope that we see this from the next government, or is that already being committed to either way?
Yeah, first, IBEC came out strongly in support of the carbon tax on the basis that it is needed to send that investment signal and on the condition that it was ring-fenced. And also that upward trajectory, that gradual upward trajectory, small increases annually, gives people the time, householders and businesses, time to make the adjustment. And the Department of Finance making the decision to ring-fence that was really important to get the buy-in. One of the other proposals was that the money just be sent back to the consumer, but then you have the risk of, well, what is that money going to be spent on, and could that just offset the emissions reduction? Could it be spent on carbon-intensive activities, for example? So ring-fencing it, putting it into a pot, using that money then to finance decarbonisation across all the sectors that need it. That's really important. But it is, in the end of the day, it's a small drop in the ocean in terms of the overall amount of investment that is required.
Yeah, that was my response to your question. I think there is a role for carbon tax. Friends of the Earth has always been supportive of it in principle and of the polluter pays principle. But I think there's a couple of, maybe three weaknesses. And to start with the last one is that the one that Conor just mentioned. Particularly if you're ring fencing it or giving it back, it isn't going to be what funds a lot of the investment we need, because it's not going to be enough, and anyway we're going to be giving some of it back or ring fencing it for particular projects. Like, to take the example of upgrading our homes, the estimates vary, but it could be 50 billion we need to spend over the next decade, and there's no way that money's going to come from carbon tax. It isn't all going to come from tax anyway. It has to come from people's own pockets, and there has to be loan schemes, etc. But the scale of the investment now needed, because again we've waited so long, isn't going to be matched by the carbon tax. It has to come from general taxation, and money is also cheap at the moment, so the government is going to need to borrow to invest appropriately, or at least it has been cheap. I mean, it's a pity we weren't able to borrow during the Troika times and invest in retrofitting then, when the builders had nothing to do rather than trying to do it now. That, you know, we had this is a slight aside, but we had a more Keynesian approach from George Bush in the US than we had from Angela Merkel here, and that actually did restrain our capacity to be countercyclical and to invest at a time when we could have made a big difference cheaply. But anyway, that's water under the bridge. We are where we are now. But I think the issue with the carbon tax is that there's both a practical weakness as well and a political one. The practical one is, if people don't have access to the alternatives, it feels like a punishment, and that it also drives the urban-rural divide on climate. So it needs to be wrapped around with all those other measures and investments. And finally, well, it's just that it's building on that one, that it becomes a lightning rod for dissatisfaction. Whereas if you're leading with, you know, just transition for the workers and money point, no one has an attachment to coal in their electricity. That's a big thing the government can do, and then everything else we do is less polluting, or on insulation, or on public transport. And you frame it as investment and opportunity and progress, and not as tax. I think people will come with us more.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Maybe just one thing. I suppose there are successes too in how Ireland has performed over the last couple of years. For example, the Better Energy Scheme through the Sustainable Energy Authority, which helps householders to insulate their homes or to switch to lower carbon heating solutions, and also helps businesses to decarbonise their industrial processes. And I think the way that scheme has been structured has been very positive in delivering savings. We know that they will probably get more difficult over time as there are harder to achieve measures. But it has also helped to change really the role of your electricity supplier or your gas supplier, because part of our product offering now is to help people to transition over to lower carbon solutions for their homes or for their businesses. And I think for businesses, we were speaking about the carbon tax, but that long-term trajectory allows businesses to plan and to make investment decisions. And that clarity and that confidence will also drive these longer-term investments, because many of the low-carbon investments that we make, whether as a renewable generator or as a factory changing its processes, they're beneficial in the long run, but they will have a couple of years payback. So if you have that confidence that you would otherwise be facing a carbon tax, you have more confidence to sell that investment back to your finance board or what have you. And certainly for us in building a wind farm, for example, we believe offshore wind really is the technology of scale to help us in the next decade and beyond. Those projects will take 5-6 years to develop from inception through to development. So at the outset, if you don't have confidence, that the policy is going to remain as such, it becomes very difficult to make those investment decisions. And so for those reasons as well, we think the carbon tax and that growing trajectory and confidence over time, and when it comes to the emissions trading scheme across the EU, it certainly has helped to give investors confidence.
And I want to come back, before we wrap up this podcast, I want to come back to this this issue of business, business's relationship with sustainability, both from a sort of a buyer's perspective, but also for an from an operational perspective as well. So guys, stay with me, because earlier I caught up with Christopher Wellis, who is the Chief Sustainability Officer and Vice President at Hewlett-Packard Enterprises. He had just flown in from Davos to meet business leaders in Ireland to talk about climate change and sustainability from a business perspective. He told me about the conversations that were taking place around this topic in Davos, why investors prefer sustainable companies now, and how businesses are really leading the way globally in this area. But he started by defining what he believes sustainability means.
Business at the ballot box. Be the voice.
Yeah, well, I think it tends to have its roots really in environmental related concepts. But when I think about sustainability, I really think about it across three dimensions: social, economic, and environmental. And it's a matter of using resources in the right way today so that you could sustain long-term growth over the future.
Why do you think it is something, and I say if you ask so many business leaders, it's like their number one challenge for either the next year or the next decade is how to fully tackle it, becoming a sustainable company and being a sustainable operation. Why do you think we've really seen this come to the fore in the last couple of years as a main concern?
Well, I think there's a number of sort of drivers. One is, whereas 15 years ago or so, I think there was a lot of distrust in the business community, I think now there is even more distrust sort of on the government side, right? So increasingly, I think civil society, the overall population in general, is really looking to business to fill that vacuum where they feel government has perhaps left us a bit high and dry, and take the lead in terms of a voice, and take the lead in terms of being purpose-driven and our actions in order to achieve a more sustainable society. We know that businesses have an important role to play.
And one of the clearest indications that this is high on the agenda is the conversations that we're having around the tables at Davos this year. And you were there, I believe.
Yeah, that's right. I came into Ireland from last week in Davos, and really top of mind was the conversation around forming the right partnerships. How do you form partnerships between civil society, governments, and business with a focus on really innovation on the business side? How do we move things forward at the speed that we're used to moving, and trying to alleviate, say, some of the bureaucratic bloat, let's say, that governments may take on if they try to do this by themselves, but also listening to the heartbeat and the pulse of civil society, really the conscience, I think, of what's happening today and the movement around sustainable development.
When you were there, did you hear any interesting solutions or interesting visions for how it can be achieved in a practical sense?
Well, I mean, I think there's really no secret sauce, but I think what we really need to do is, I mean, put these folks together, put these different groups together. Often we'll force them into the same room and nothing comes out of it, but occasionally something quite magical does come out of it. So I think we need to replicate those activities. There are a number of different partnerships that I think are happening across the tech space that are encouraging. There's also a lot of momentum in terms of what a lot of tech companies are doing around climate right now. I think that's very top of mind.
Any examples that would spring to mind about what tech companies are doing around climate?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's been some great news that's come from our partners in Microsoft. I think, you know, we've announced some very ambitious goals over the last course of a few months or so. And, you know, you're hearing stuff from Salesforce, also some announcements from Google. So I think we're really starting to see a bit of momentum around how do we tackle the footprint associated with the data-driven society that we currently live in today.
it's easier for some types of industry and some types of business to become more sustainable than it is for others, depending on the business model, depending on what they're manufacturing. So what do you say to, so is it important for everybody to sort of do it at their own pace as fast as they can, but to understand that maybe we can't necessarily do it as quickly as some other companies in different industries?
Well, I think you're seeing almost the perfect storm right now. You've got the investor community. There was the second letter written by Larry Fink, the CEO of BlackRock, a week or so ago. It came out, a letter to CEOs essentially saying the way that they were going to make investment decisions moving forward was going to be largely based on how companies are looking at their long-term governance, including issues around climate change, climate resiliency, and other social factors. That's coming from the investment side. You have coming out of the EU Green Deal, signaling to companies within the EU that this is something high on the agenda, including the Circular Economy Action Plan. And then you have customers, large demand and pull through, which customers are really demanding more sustainable products, and they're looking to understand better what's happening with their own supply chain. And then finally, you have a large group of millennials entering the workforce. They came from an entirely different value system that older generations did, and they're bringing that value system into the organizations that they're working for.
So being sustainable is not simply a nice to have or a nice to do. It's actually fundamental to the survival and the evolution of a company.
Absolutely. I mean, in our case, it's obviously good to be a good global citizen. But for instance, in FY19, sustainability-related practices, sustainability-related products and services drove about $585 million in wins for us as a company. And that's increasing on an annual basis.
Business at the Ballot Box. Be the voice.
That was Christopher Wellis, Chief Sustainability Officer and Vice President at Hewlett-Packard Enterprises. Conor Minogue from IBEC, quite an interesting interview. This is an area that you have particular interest in.
Yeah, and I think what Chris is saying is very true. Businesses globally and here in Ireland are in many cases taking on that leadership role and stepping in where government is not taking action. So Hewlett-Packard Enterprises is one example, but even last week you might have seen the coverage of Microsoft, who have announced that they're targeting not just net zero but net negative. So that is to take out the carbon emissions that they have produced since starting as a business in 1975. So that's a standout example, and but there's a lot of pledges, a lot of commitments being made, a lot of business doing a lot of interesting things around the circular economy. I think one thing though we have to remember is businesses are going to move at different paces depending on, you know, the nature of their production, their geography, etc. So what's right for one business is not going to be right for every business, and government then has a key role of stepping in providing the supports to help them make those investments. But we do have to be conscious that certain sectors, there are limits to what they can do technologically. And what we don't want is a situation where environmentally sound companies here in Ireland lose market share to businesses in other jurisdictions that don't have the same standards or have higher carbon footprints. So there's ways of protecting that, and the EU has a key role to play at a global level to provide that leadership, to bring other countries and other companies acting in other countries alongside, so that there is that level playing field when it comes to emissions reduction.
Can I ask, maybe, do you favour a carbon border tax adjustment out of it?
So a carbon border tax adjustment is one of the new proposals of the European Green Deal. It's hard to see how it's going to work, so we're open-minded about it. It becomes difficult when you're trying to calculate the carbon of a product. Like, think of a white goods object like a washing machine. There's so many component parts produced from so many different suppliers. But it's certainly something. It needs to be tackled. Carbon leakage needs to be tackled. And it is a very real threat. If you look at the European Union actually has reduced emissions substantially since the 1990s. A lot of that is down to actual emissions reduction and energy efficiency. But a part of that is because of the activity has moved to other areas of the world, like the developing world, like China, etc. Emissions are still being produced. They're just being produced elsewhere. So you do have to tackle the carbon leakage piece. And that is an issue for Ireland's agriculture sector in particular, where if it's more sustainable to do it in Ireland, would you not do it in Ireland instead of risking an increase in emissions elsewhere in the world?
I think something that's been an interesting trend in the last number of years is that we see our customers demand green products of us, and many of our commercial customers see their customers demand green products of them. And in addition, SSE, for those who mightn't be familiar, is a FTSE Top 40 PLC, and we've recently issued a number of green bonds. So these are investors or lenders who are give preferential rates, I suppose, for green lending. And this enables us to deliver our projects at lower cost and really to drive that transition. So I think that trend shows that out there in the business world, in the finance world, the benefits of the climate transition are seen. And it seems to be something that we need to do and to make our economy more resilient to the risks of climate change.
Before we wrap, Marion, I'm going to stay with you for a moment. What do companies like SSE, what is the big challenge you face to try and sort of drive through the vision you have for the country and for the industry? And what would you like the next government of Ireland to, what supports do you need from them in order to make it happen and to get through that challenge?
Yeah, so we have projects that we would like to deliver, renewable electricity projects that can help to realise Ireland's 70% ambition or beyond. We think that onshore wind will have a role, but in particular offshore wind will make those big steps that we need. So we are bringing those projects forward. But there are elements of more detailed policy that we need. For example, connection policy or the renewable electricity support scheme to enable us to deliver those projects. So really it's to enable us to move from project plans to really delivering these projects. So we need commitment to those more detailed policy matters and to deliver them at pace, because we know that interim targets for renewables have been set for 2025 and 2030. But really, if we want to be hitting those marks, we need to be starting construction quite soon. So that's what we need from government, more pace.
Oisin, you have for a long time had a very strong vision for what you would like to see from this country in terms of where we're at around climate change and sustainability. I think as Conor mentioned earlier, we're at a really critical point now. There seems to be a groundswell of support behind actually making a proper change. So what do you want to see from the next government, or what do you believe that they need to prioritise in terms of making that happen?
I mean, I do think the next 5 years are really crucial if we're going to turn the corner and get up to speed on reducing emissions. I think the biggest one is decarbonising electricity, as Marion has said, and that means peat and coal off the grid. And that means sitting down with the trade unions and the communities in the Midlands and Clare and talking about money and talking about investment and talking about training opportunities. Some of it's going to happen anyway, but better that it happen by consensus and with some future planned out for those communities, rather than just letting it happen because of the carbon price finally kicking in Moneypoint, or the planning permission in the Midlands. So that really is the key one, an actual active engagement by government to see that as a success to decarbonise electricity. And then after that, I think it is about investing in retrofitting and making that, again, helping others invest, because that's where there's win-wins. It's, you know, it's warmer homes, lower fuel bills, cleaner air and lower emissions. It's a quadruple win and jobs. So it's a, you know, nothing to stop us doing that other than a bit of imagination and effort. And public transport. We need to, from a congestion perspective as well as from an emissions perspective and from a air pollution perspective, we need to help people get out of their cars and into public transport and onto bicycles and onto their feet in cities, and also look for rural solutions to car transport dependency as well. Those three things. I was delighted to hear Marion say too, though, that companies should be not just reducing their emissions but acting as advocates. I think we, as well as being commercial, they need to be citizens in this and to help put pressure on governments, because, you know, wonderful as I think Friends of the Earth is, and hard as we try to build a citizens' movement for climate action, we know that governments also listen to business, put it that way, and so we need business to be strong advocates for action.
And Conor Minogue, as the representative voice for businesses across Ireland, what final messages do you like to put forward?
So there's kind of three key things that we're looking for from the next government. The first is political leadership. Actually, not just from the government, but from all political parties in the next Dáil. We can't have climate action caught up in politics. It needs to be prioritised at a cross-party basis, and building on the work from last year's Joint Oireachtas Committee cross-party report. The other thing is social dialogue. So there is a real opportunity there for all the stakeholders to come together, not just once a year or twice a year, but on a regular basis to get through some of these big issues. Oisin mentioned the just transition. That's one of them. But there's so many issues, so many hard decisions that need to be made. So we need to bring all the heads around the table to get through that. And finally, it's the investment piece. I think Danny's comments in the first podcast in this series are particularly relevant. there's a lot of money that needs to be spent, but the true cost is not investing in this. The true cost is if we don't build, take public transport for example, if we don't build Metrolink, if we don't build roll out bus connects, cycle lanes, move away from an over-reliance on the car, we're just going to see worsening air quality, growth in greenhouse gas emissions, more congestion, and then there'll be fines associated with that as well. So while the economy is going strong, there's an opportunity to spend that money on the infrastructure that's required, on the changes that are required. And if we don't do it now, when will we do it? So what are we waiting for?
Completely agree with all that.
Okay, well look, thank you all for joining us on today's episode of Business at the Ballot Box. Marion Troy of SSE Ireland, Oisin Coughlin of Friends of the Earth Ireland, and Conor Minogue, Energy and Climate Spokesperson at IBEC. And that is all we've got time for on this episode. Thank you very much for tuning in. And if you would like to join the conversation on Twitter or LinkedIn, use the hashtag BeTheVoice. You can also email us at ibecpodcasts@ibec.ie. That's ibecpodcasts@ibec.ie. In the next episode of Business at the Ballot Box, we will be looking at how to accelerate Ireland's digital ambition in the company of a number of guests, including Ciarán Macquarie, National Technology Officer of Microsoft Ireland, and Eric O'Donovan, Head of Digital Economy Policy at IBEC. Hope you can join us for that. Take care.
IBEC, the voice of Irish business.